Our friend Colin Fleming joins us. Colin, good afternoon.
What's up, sir?
Well, we're just having a spirited discussion during the break there about 80s TV shows inspired by today's upcoming discussion about the Golden Girls.
I love the Golden Girls. I am a Golden Girls fiend. I admit it. I've always loved it. I even know the differences between the various versions of the theme song.
That's a whole new level of fandom right there. Now, what drew you? I mean, you're compared to me because I'm older than Dirt. I mean, you're a pretty young guy. You were what, 10 or so when that show debuted?
When it debuted, it would have been the mid-80s. So yeah, I would have been about that age, and I watched it right from the get-go. Of course, now it's on ubiquitously. You cannot get away from it on like the Hallmark station. It's on in the morning. It's on at night. And I liked the ensemble. I liked, really, this will sound strange maybe, but it's a nice preface to aspects of our discussion. It was a little bit like a hockey locker room, except it was women. And I didn't really see a distinction. I liked how they would tease each other mercilessly. It wasn't this notion of, oh, you're hurting my feelings. It wasn't personal. And they had intense loyalty for each other. I thought Bea Arthur was just a wonderful actress. And it was doing things on television that were so clever, so cleverly licentious, that it wasn't until I was an adult that I even realized what was going on. And like one joke in particular, it has to be the bawdiest thing ever in the history of television. And I didn't even get it until I was like 34.
Are you going to share it?
Okay, so Rose, right, Betty White, her husbands all die. And they die while they are in an intimate situation with her.
Yes.
So Blanche says to her, well, how did you know that the last one, that the end had come? And she said, because near the end, he started yelling, Rose, I'm going, I'm going. I'm sitting there one night, I'm drinking like coffee from the Dunkin' Donuts, comes out my nose, I'm like, oh, wow, you really went there, Golden Girls. And the only reason I think that they were able to get that on television is because it was too clever for the censors to catch.
Oh, yeah. Well, and certainly, you know, at 9, 10, 11 years old, right over your head.
Well, think about this. Blanche's hookup friend, this is another one. This is a little on the nose, is Mel Bushman. He's literally the Bushman. Obviously, different, like, grooming habits in the 80s and all that, but another one, right past it.
Well, I love aspects of the show, not the least of which is the level of friendship between those four women. It was a realistic, adult, mature friendship, and you didn't see a lot of that in those days. Well, I'm not sure that you see that much of it now. And it leads us to the next part of the discussion, which is about the nature of friendship, relationships, and your assertion that we can be a little bit too passive about these things.
I think we're entirely ruled by passivity in most of our lives right now. We elect not to risk very much. We don't court true connection because real vulnerability scares us. And you don't sort of slide backwards into any relationship worth having. It's something you actively pursue. You actively reach out to the other person. You don't do this trend that we see so often of ghosting. And you see it at the quotidian level. People ghost each other with not replying to texts. You know what? And I'm on the T. Every single person is looking down at their phone. Everyone has the time, but we let everything slide. And I think that factors into how unhappy many of us are, how depressed we can be, how disconnected. And you have to be active in your relationship. It's something you work at, no matter what kind of relationship it is. And that was always a staple of the Golden Girls. And it sounds silly. I mean, I guess maybe I'm not the target demographic for a show like that. But that, again, brings us into sort of notions, too, of masculinity. And I think that sort of friendship and being active in your relationships transcends any kind of anything, especially gender.
Well, and I think this is such an important conversation to have. And I've spouted off a little bit about this on Facebook, but with so much discussion about school shootings and violence lately, and there are certainly all kinds of issues that play into this. But I really believe that a big part of it is a generation of angry boys, because it's always a boy, and angry boys who don't know how to express themselves, who don't have outlets, and many of whom have been told from an early age or led to believe that any asking for help, any sign of even compassion, tolerance, concern for others is somehow weakness, and even worse, is somehow feminine.
I think anger pretty much knows no boundaries. It goes from age level to age level, from gender to gender, from race to race. So I don't think it's necessarily an anger thing. I think it is a kind of prescriptive notion, though, of what masculinity means. I mean, I deal with like a lot of anger. If I get hate mail from someone telling me to off myself because of something I wrote or because I didn't want to go out on a date with someone, it's just as likely to be from a female. We see sort of kind of this war on men in some ways right now. But also, there is this idea that kids, boys, think that they have these stereotypes that they should fall back on, and it's this hardness, this lack of emoting, this toughness. And what people don't seem to realize is that if you drop the pretense and you are comfortable enough to be who you are, no matter who that is, and it's not a pose, it's not costuming, people are going to be awfully impressed by you. That is how, if you wanted to be like sort of tough, not actually like tough, like, oh, let's have a fight, but someone who's formidable in their self-awareness, that's a matter of being who you are. I go to a lot of things, for instance, that you wouldn't think of as like necessarily male-driven. I'm at the ballet all the time. People will make comments to me. You don't seem like someone who would be here. I'm at the museum like every other day. I love women's hockey. I love the Golden Girls. But you know what? No one has ever questioned anything about who I am in terms of my identity. I'm just as likely to be at a hockey game. But I realized pretty early in life that when you drop the pretending and you drop the posing, people will fall in line with who you are. And I think these boys, certainly the ones behind horrible, horrible tragedies, they don't have that kind of perspective in their lives. They don't have role models at the level of friends, which is what we've been talking about. And they fall back on that kind of hard, trumped up machismo, and that does no one any good, and it often has tragic outcome.
It makes its way into our language too, and often in the world of sports, when a player misses time for an injury or anything like that, fans who believe that that player is not getting back into action, you'll hear them talk about the wussification, or you know, call him a pussy, because that's another way of equating that physical ability to get out there and participate in your sports with being a real man. This idea that real men play through injuries, and the other equally ridiculous notion, which is that somehow women don't have any tolerance for pain, which is the dumbest thing ever.
I don't think there's a lot of difference, to be honest with you, between anyone. I think that there are just trends often in society where certain times one group is the haves and the other group is the have-nots. But people oftentimes are just very similar. They have the same fears, they have the same feelings, they have the same worries. And yes, you definitely see in a place like Boston sports culture here, you see this hard-o act by TV hosts, by radio hosts. And it's like, you're a sad little man going on about the terms you mentioned. And it's like, you know, this one host, for instance, on a program here, is trying to just kind of like out-masculine his other host. And he's talking about NBA players on the road. And he said, yeah, they all just want some road beef. It's like, come on, dude. Grow up. You're not 13 in the locker room. And it's like, you're a 40-year-old man. You sound ridiculous. You sound like someone very insecure, someone who got out of a situation before you like did anything wrong, but you sound like someone who could have gone down a bad pair of tracks. And again, you just go back to being who you are. The harder thing actually is finding out who you are, but it's very much that pose. It's a crutch. And once the crutch is kicked away, all hell can break loose.
But that's a great lesson, too. We're talking to Colin Fleming, of course, here on Downtown. As a young person, a man or a woman, whatever it is, but to embrace the things that you're passionate about and reject any labels that might be applied to them externally, because those labels mean nothing.
There's a great line from Pete Townsend. People don't tend to know the song, Naked Eye. They sing, you can cover up your guts, but when you cover up your nuts, you're admitting that there must be something wrong. People don't understand this.
Yeah.
I used to go to a bar after my life fell apart after my divorce, and the bartender was about my age. And early on in us getting to know each other, he said to me that he was collecting unemployment. He didn't work at the bar that often. And a lot of people would guard a secret like that. But when someone says something like that to you, if you think about the experiences in your life when someone has shared something that maybe would be a kind of like stereotypical case of embarrassment, you've never felt, what a loser. You've thought to yourself, that's impressive. They can just own that. I should be more like that. Now, maybe that made you intimidated of that person. Maybe that person was lonely because they were so secure in themselves that that makes people uncomfortable. But you never thought that person was weak. And you wanted to be a little bit more like that individual yourself. And maybe you took some of their approach and incorporated it into your own life. And that helped you make better connections, better friendships. Maybe you arose to somebody's Blanche after that.
Well, and that goes back to the original thought that when you take that chance, when you are active and not passive, when you open up and share a little something about yourself, that opens some doors. Maybe they get slammed in your face, but you can at least walk away with your head held high.
I think people have a hard time, too, though, finding out what they are passionate about. People tend to only care or be interested in or read what is stuck in front of their faces. My parents always encouraged me to go out and be interested in what I was going to be interested in, whether that was hiking out into the woods and looking for black racers or collecting baseball cards or playing hockey and being recruited to play college hockey or going to the ballet, like with my dad as a kid. I mean, I watched the ballet and I watched Wayne Gretzky and I saw a lot of the same things. I heard a lot of the same things when I listened to a Mozart piano sonata. But I was always that way. It was just ingrained in me. And I think people have a fear that if they go looking for something to care about, they're going to find that there isn't something they care about because they're lacking in some ways. And you have to go out and, like the John Ford film, The Searchers, you have to search. And people are so sort of wired towards indolence right now because that is what's safe. And what happens is you have a lot of lonely people, and sometimes you have some just horrific tragedies that we're almost becoming desensitized to in a way because it's just which one is going to be next.
Alan Fleming joins us every Tuesday here on Downtown. Keep your eye on the Maine Black Bear women's hockey team as well, making their first trip into the semifinals of the Hockey East playoffs.
Oh, do you know who they're playing first?
You know, I don't. They beat BU last weekend up here 2 out of 3.
Well, the Boston College women's team was number 2 in the country right now, and most of their best players are just coming back from the Olympics, so they missed a year. And we don't usually think in terms like this, but that team next year, the BC women's hockey team, it could be one of the all-time great college teams in any sport. And it's funny because when I go to the games, I don't know if you've gone to like the Maine's women's games, how well they're attended, but it's like me, some parents. And hockey parents, regardless of gender, are every bit as awful as they are at every single age, and some loyal roommates. It's like 14 of us.
Well, Maine will be playing Northeastern. It must be. Is it down there? Because I think Northeastern was the 2 seed. Maine was the 3.
Yes, in Boston.
Oh, there you go. Check them out, Colin. Cheer for the Bears.
All right. I appreciate the tip.
And stop listening to Minahan. It'll make you crazy.
Oh, God. Hockey individual. Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Colin. Have a great week. We'll see you next Tuesday. Colin Fleming on Downtown.